The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Yo, welcome back to Dark Side of the Pooch. He is Dr. Rab Stewart. I am Tony Curry. This is called Dark Side of the Pooch because, well, it has to do with veterinarian care. So that's the pooch part. Dark Side of the Moon, obviously a very famous album from Pink Floyd. Did you realize there, Dr. Rab, that Pink Floyd is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? But you know that David Gilmour and Roger Waters are not in the Hall of Fame as individuals.
That's a shame. And before we move on from this, I would like to petition David Gilmour to expand his current U.S. tour that is only 4 dates.
Oh, wow.
This fall, 2 shows at Madison Square Garden and 2 shows at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles. I would petition him to make a stop, probably not right in the middle, but, you know, Birmingham is only a short flight away from New York and L.A.
Yeah, and right in the middle, right?
I mean, I bet if you tried hard enough, you could draw a triangle or a prism, if you will, that would, you know, if you go from,
it would look just like
it over here for New York,
it would look just like it.
Birmingham, LA, back to New York,
it would be Dark Side.
You could make a prism out of the United States. All right. So, David, I know you're listening. Let's make it happen.
So, David Gilmour, Roger Waters, we know they don't get along, or else they'd be playing together. We know they did that show here at Legion Field back in the 90s, which was fantastic. It was the first surround sound stadium thing I think they ever did. And on that tour, I remember they had speakers at Legion Field. That was after U2 did their thing and after the Rolling Stones did Steel Wheels. So are you a David Gilmour Pink Floyd guy or a Roger Waters Pink Floyd guy? Or are you a Syd Barrett, screw both those guys, Pink Floyd kind of guy?
I'm definitely not a Syd Barrett guy.
Weird.
But, you know, Gilmour and Waters, you can't have one without the other. It is a very Lennon and McCartney thing for me.
Okay.
Because the late Pink Floyd stuff was very Roger Waters, and it's really depressing and not very melodic.
You're talking the Comfortably Numb days?
Well, so The Wall has great Gilmour solos in it.
Yeah.
But there was an album after. Okay, so the Division Bell, if I remember right, is without Gilmour. No, I'm sorry, without Waters. And that album is not, in my opinion, very strong.
Yeah.
But then there was another album, I think it's called the Final Cut. And that was mainly Waters, I think. I could be wrong on that. But there was an album that was towards the end that was predominantly Waters. And there was an album totally without Waters. Well, and both of those albums are bad.
Momentary Lapse of Reason, that was with Waters, right? That was had the Learning to Fly on it. That was fantastic. I love that album.
That was Gilmour.
That was Gilmour. Okay, Turning Away. That was a great album.
Yes, yes, that's a good album, but it's not a great album.
No,
their great albums had both of those guys participating heavily. But I guess if I had to say, like, the solo work of Gilmour is much more my speed than the solo work of Waters, but the Pink Floyd work. You can't have one without the other.
I'm all about, you know, let's make this thing last as long as possible. Randy Travis did something that has not been done. I'm sure it's been done. We just didn't know about it. He has obviously produced a ton of great music and had a stroke back in 2013. He has just released a brand new single of him singing new material, but it's done with AI. He had his blessings put on. So they took his 1986 album and stripped it of all musical intensities and just put vocals into the machine and then used that in order to sing his new material. And I'm kind of like, and it's him, but it ain't him. And it's Randy, and it's better than no Randy, and Randy's still alive. It's not posthumous. It's not like we're coming out with Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson. So he's still alive. So that kind of counts for something, but I'm just like, I don't know. Something just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right that he's not actually singing. It's him. It's his written word. It's his melodics and harmony, but it's just not him. He's not singing. It's a computer singing. So that's kind of weird. But what, you know, with the Pink Floyd thing, I don't know how many Pink Floyd laser light shows there are out there right now. I thought there was always just one. And now I think there's like 100 different Pink Floyd laser light show. I don't know if they sell the rights to it. I don't know. It's like almost every night in some city, there's a laser light show going on somewhere and it's super cool. And they're just playing Pink Floyd music and just having laser lights. And it's super neat. But it's kind of made it a kind of almost a joke to me. And so I don't know. Without both those guys on stage at the same time, to me, it's just not Pink Floyd.
No, it's not. But I looked it up real quick, and the name of the album that I was talking about is The Final Cut, and David Gilmour had very little to do with it. It's mostly Waters, and I can't really get on board with it. And then The Division Bell was after that. It's mainly Gilmour. That one is a much better album than The Final Cut. So
The Final Cut was really weird, too, because Gilmour was on it. I want to say that he joined him on the beginning, and they just smack dab beat each other up, and like halfway through the experience he got out, because you're like, if he's on it, then why is he on the whole thing? Because he was only on parts of it. Yeah,
it was basically an album written totally by Waters, and I think Gilmour was like, what am I even doing here?
Yeah. What is the Pink Floyd of dogs?
Oh man. All right, so it would be a really weird dog breed initially.
Slow,
very strange,
little stoner.
Yeah, it'd be very, very, very strange initially, and then it would grow up into a pretty well-respected, accessible dog, and then at the end, it would be terrible. So, let's see. I think I'm going to go with a Boston Terrier.
Okay, there you go.
They're very strange when they're young. They're very, very strange, almost alien-like. And then they're commercially acceptable when they're like 1 to maybe 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, they're just mean and terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's perfect. I think it's great. Dark Side of the Pooch brought to you by the wonderful folks down there at Ed's Pet World. They've been in business for 50 years. My chinchilla is killing it. I love that thing. Dogs are doing great. Everyone's super healthy, exotic pets. You got bearded dragons. You got tarantulas. You got fish, all kinds of great stuff down there. Ed's Pet World, check them out. They've been in business for 50 years. And also Sasquatch Comics and Toys, or Toys and Comics, depending on what you're going down to look for, 60s, 70s, 80s, stuff that's still unopened. If you find some stuff in your attic, take it down to Sasquatch Toys and Comics and go see Seth and the Buy, Sell, and Trade. They started business back in October and they're killing it too. They're doing really, really well. I brought some of that stuff up because there is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just gave out their latest nominees. Peter Frampton, who made it in after 26 shots, 26 times. He's like, I can't believe I'm in. He was voted in by the public, by the way. Foreigner got in, which I didn't think was going to happen. Mary J. Blige, Cher, Kool & the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, and then Jimmy Buffett. And I did not know about Jimmy Buffett until recently. And I'm wondering if Jimmy just got in because he just passed away. I don't know if they did this vote after or before he passed away. I believe it was after. So he made it in posthumously as well. So, Dee Snider came out from Twisted Sister. He said, for God's sakes, start putting people in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame while they're still alive, because the people can't enjoy the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. First of all, he said the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a joke. And I'm like, well, if it's a joke, then why do you care whether you're alive or not if you're inducted in? So it means something, these folks. Evidently, MC5, you ever heard of the band MC5?
Yes. MC5's good.
They've been up forever, and they finally got voted in this year, and their last remaining member just passed away a couple weeks ago, I guess. So no one's there to enjoy the actual induction into the Hall of Fame. So
if the Hall of Fame is a joke, then Twisted Sister definitely deserves to be in, because they are also a huge joke.
Well, you know, we went through the list. Listen to these names that are not in the Hall of Fame. All right. Phil Collins. Genesis is in. He's not in. But come on. Phil Collins, to me, was better solo than he was with Genesis. Brian Adams, Greg Allman, Bad Company. America, BTO, Black Crowes, Boston, Bon Jovi, Joe Cocker, Roger Daltrey, Foghat, John Fogerty, Jay Giles, Styx. If you're putting Foreigner in, you got to put Styx in. They're one and the same. Pete Townsend, Three Dog Night, Sting, Motley Crue, Robert Plant. Roger Waters,
Robert David, Plant.
Roger Waters.
Robert Plant has amazing solo work.
Oh my Incredible God. Oh, yeah. I mean, even if he had never been in Zeppelin, it would be unbelievable. Sammy Hagar, Grand Funk, Guess Who, Don Henley, Kansas, Jethro Tull, Huey Lewis, The News. I can make an argument for them. Cyndi Lauper, The Monkees, and Meatloaf. Yeah, I'm just at REO Speedwagon. The Foreigner thing is like, if you're going to put Foreigner in, you got to put REO Speedwagon in. You got to put, you got Journey in already. Motley Crue is probably going to have to get in. And so G Steiner's whole thing is like, if you're going to put Motley Crue in, which I think is eventually going to make it, right? I mean, it could be 30 years from now, but they're going to get in. So why not just put everybody in? And I'm like, you can't put everybody in. The Beatles didn't make it into the third year. Okay.
That's crazy to me.
You had Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Dion, I think made it in the first year. And then the Beatles, of course, they get in the same year the Rolling Stones go in, because it was almost like they had to put them both in at the same time because they just beat each other up. So I understand what he's saying. That obviously the Beatles, but you have to, when you're starting a Hall of Fame, if you have the Dr. Rab Pet Hall of Fame, you can't put everybody in the first year because you'll have nothing to put in the following years. So that's probably why they're waiting on Quiet Riot and Twisted Sister to get in the year 2057.
I wonder if they would put in like a limit, because, in the Baseball Hall of Fame, which is, I don't know, maybe the most infamous Hall of Fame that there is, maybe the best Hall of Fame that there is, depending on the way you look at it. But if you don't make it in within a certain year, you're never going to make it
in. By the way, do you know how many times the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, inducted zero?
I think that there has been some years.
Nine times.
I was going to say five.
Just
five.
2022 was the last time it happened. Nine times Major League Baseball said, oh, well, ain't getting a body up. I mean, and you're thinking it's obviously not about the money, because, I mean, because they could, but then again, it's totally up to writers' vote too. So, I mean, we really have nothing to do. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, that has this thing they can put in whoever they want. There's a writer's list, but I think there's also this backdoor committee that kind of says, yeah, they're good to go. And then, of course, they also have the human element, that is the fan vote. But you have to have enough to get in every single year, and they're smart enough, because obviously you have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, the other thing too is, Reb, is you have the induction thing, man, and these bands play. I mean, as difficult as it was to see Duran get up on stage last year. So, I mean, think about some of these dudes that you're going to be putting up on stage. They're not even going to be able to play.
No. What about the Zombies from a couple of years ago?
They should put in Roger and Pete Townsend in the same year.
Yeah.
And let them play together, because they're still doing it. Who'd you just say?
Who did I say?
The Bee Gees?
No, the Zombies.
Oh, the Zombies.
The Zombies from 2 years ago. Those guys were super old, and they did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. She's Not There, one of my favorite songs from them, is fantastic. All right. I've been watching the Westminster Dog Show. I don't know how. It's another one of those things. It used to be a pleasure, a joy, fun, and now it's on everywhere, and I can't ever tell if it's new. I can't tell if it's the 103rd Westminster or it's something that's played from like 14 years ago. I'm assuming the one it's on right now is live, because it said live on it. It said new and live. And I have thoroughly enjoyed, I think I watched the 8-inch last night and then the 16-inch. Is what they call the 8-inch and the 16-inch? All right. You're laughing.
I have no idea.
No, the toy group is the 8-inch toy group and the 16-inch toy group.
This may surprise a lot of our viewers here. I've never once watched
the 8-inch toy group.
Westminster Dog Show.
You've never seen the Westminster Dog Show? It's a joy. And I was watching, it wasn't Best of Show last night. It was the field test, the field test. And they got the bar for this 8-inch, the thing is like, I'm not kidding. It's like literally the bar is laying on the ground. Like, they just have to make sure they don't trip over it to get over it. It's hilarious to watch. And then, of course, they got the wigwag thing where they're going in between the poles. Yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, I ended up watching it for an hour and 45 minutes last night. I thought, let's see what's going on. I was going to watch.
This is my, I'll give you a glimpse into my TV viewing.
Yeah.
This has been my TV viewing for the past several years. If there is a sporting event that I care about, it will be on in the background and I may or may not be able to pay attention to much of it at all.
Yeah.
Like for instance, last night I had the Braves game on and I probably watched a combined 10 minutes of it total. And then my wife and I will watch the Game Show Network in bed for about a half hour before we both fall asleep.
Wow. What's your now hold on, Game Show Network. Are we talking old time game work?
So when we go to bed,
Joker's Wild matches, match game, stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm talking about that Game Show Network, but the show that is always on when we go to bed is Steve Harvey Family Feud.
Mm. Yeah. I have seen the Steve Harvey thing and it's gotten too nasty. And they're setting the questions out. They're setting up the questions now. It's almost soft porn. It is. I mean, it's like, name something that, you know, both is moist and super lubricated when it gets wet. It's like, dude, I mean, they know what the answers are going to be, you know, my husband's mouth. And I'm like, and then Steve acts like he's surprised by someone saying penis or something. It's Family Feud here. I'm like, dude, did you hear the question you just said?
Maybe we should get a team together and go on there.
Yeah. Is there any truth that Richard Dawson had like 17 different types of syphilis on his lips after he kissed all those women for all those years?
I cannot. Like those old Family Feuds where he was the host, it just makes my skin crawl. Like, seriously.
Dude, can you imagine doing that now? Could you imagine Ryan Seacrest doing a game show where he kisses all the females? Could you imagine Steve Harvey kissing all the females on the show?
He probably wants to kiss a few of them, but
there were some lookers on. I can guarantee you this. And I think there's a game show book. I forget what it's called. It could be called Double Whammy or something like that. By the way, great game show. I love the Double Whammy.
It's still on.
Yeah, I know.
Elizabeth Banks hosts it.
Does she? Oh, it's Elizabeth Banks. Well, I'm in. Is that on the Game Show Network?
On the Game Show Network. It comes on like, I think 6 or 7 p.m. But listen, do you know that she's in her 50s?
Dude, she was a 40-year-old virgin, right? Is that the same Elizabeth Banks? Crazy girl?
Maybe so.
Crazy
blonde? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I like
me. And she was also in the Hunger Games movies. Yeah. She was,
had that rock. Weird. She's fun.
Get up.
Yeah. She's fun girl. Yeah. So that would be amazing to have a game show now where they, yeah, there was also, do you remember the movie? Was it called The Running Man with Richard Dawson and Arnold Schwarzenegger where, that was a game show, a game show where they actually killed the that you had to run through a maze of stuff. And at the end of the show, someone would die. You had to make it through this maze of, it was like
game. Was that Running Man? Cause right now I'm getting confused with the Dustin Hoffman movie where he gets his teeth pulled by the Nazi dentist.
Doc.
Or is that Marathon Man?
That's Marathon.
That's Marathon Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Marathon Man.
Is it safe yet? Is it safe yet? Oh, dude. And then he makes him swallow the diamonds. Oh, I saw that when I was like 7 years old and it still gives me nightmares. Oh, that movie.
It's a great movie.
Is it safe yet? Oh, it's real safe. It's very, very safe. Oh my gosh. That set dentistry back like 50 years, man. If you were trying to get, we're going to put gas on, you're never going to feel a thing. You watch that movie, you'll never go see a dentist again.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
I've never seen Running Man.
Oh, you got to go see it. It's a bad, I tell you. I'm surprised it's not on like TBS or something like that, because it's a fantastic movie, and Richard Dawson is like, it's just an absolute perfect for that, because he's a game show host and he's just a creep. I mean, he's just a creep, and these people are getting killed left and right. But I'm thinking to myself, when I saw that movie, I think it was like 1981, 82. When I saw that movie, I honestly thought that by the time we got to 2024, not specifically this date, that we would have a game show where we would actually see people die on it.
Oh yeah.
I'm kind of surprised. I mean, we got it now on Facebook, right? I mean, you can watch real life murders. People do life murders. It's horrible. But I mean,
it's terrible.
Let me ask you this. This is very interesting. We have Naked and Afraid XL. I mean, we've done pretty much, you know, we've done alone. We've put people out in the worst situations where the only way to get off is, you know, to take off an arm or get a helicopter ride. I wonder if you did some type of game where death was actually part of the situation, if you could pull that off. If you said, if you had alone and someone was actually mauled by a bear and killed during the taping of the show, you would hear about it. The Simon Cowell show, that big stunt show he had. He had a stunt show that was out, and you don't know about it anymore, right? Because they took it off the air. There was a stunt show where a guy was hanging between two cars and had to get between the two cars before the cars came slapping together like 50 feet in the air, and he didn't make it.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, they didn't air that part, right? That's the great thing about Evel Knievel. It was live. If he was going to die on TV, he was going to die on TV. That was the real deal, right? But would someone be willing, and would anybody watch that knowing that someone could actually die?
100% watch it. Like, that is not a question in my mind at all. They would 100% watch it, because you can go back to when I was a kid. Talk about when you were a kid. When I was a kid, man, I miss these things. The really great video stores, the great, and I'm not even talking about Blockbuster.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the mom and pop VHS video stores where they had an endless collection of movies. Like, they would have a horror section that was as, you know, as big as Blockbuster itself. Mm-hmm. And they have a comedy section and a drama section, you know, and I'm talking like Toxic Avenger 1-4 and stuff that you can't find anywhere. But back in the corner, there was this collection of Faces of Death.
Oh, yeah. See, I couldn't do that.
And people rented them. So I know that people would
when that first came out, in case people don't know what Faces of Death is, it's just different ways to die on camera. And I, of course, I don't know if it's real or not. I don't know enough about that. For the most part, everyone thought it was real because it was actual videos of people getting hit by trains and, you know, committing suicide and stuff like that. And I just thought it was the worst thing in the history of the world. I mean, I could just imagine Jesus sitting there watching that going, guys, I get uncomfortable watching like a movie rape, like a rape on movies. It makes me feel really, I see someone get shot all day long, 'cause we see that in real life, but like something that actually takes a while, like a torture scene or something, and it's in a movie. I know it's not real. It makes me really uncomfortable. Like,
once
really
you see something. Yeah. Once you see something, it's a part of you. Like, it's ingrained in you. You can't unsee it.
I saw a beheading.
Whoa.
Yeah. This was it the Taliban that was doing all the beheadings a few years back? Someone in the office had a tape of it, or not a tape of it, but something on got on the dark web and pulled it up and said, you got to watch this. And it was an actual beheading. And I wish you hadn't. I can still hear it. I can still hear it. It was horrible. It was horrible. I wish like hell you didn't show that to me. It was terrible.
I mean, it turns your stomach, like literally. The stuff like that turned to something, and whether or not the videos were real.
These were real. Yeah. But
no, I'm talking about the Faces of Death films, whether or not they were real. Disclaimers on the boxes that said it was real.
Yeah.
So I never watched them. I was too afraid, but whether or not they were real, they were marketed as such.
Yeah. All right. Since we're talking about death, let's talk about animals. What percentage of dogs do you have that come to you that got hit by cars? Seems like back in the day, I was just thinking about this the other day, and this is totally wild that we're jutting into this area. But it seems like back in the day, the only time your dog would get killed was when it got hit by a car. Maybe it's because I lived in a more of a rural area. I remember our dogs used to get hit by cars all the time. Sometimes they'd make it, sometimes they wouldn't. Sometimes they'd come back with a banged up leg. Oh, you get hit by a car, boy, it's okay. You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, we had cows in the backyard and they'd just run. But do you don't see animals getting hit by vehicles as much as you used to, do you?
No, you really don't. Especially where we are. It's great. We might see one every maybe 4 or 5 months, if that. And it's the ones that we have seen lately are ones that just barely got touched because we have so many neighborhoods now. So if you're in a neighborhood, you either have a fence or everyone's driving through your street going 10, 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So the injuries aren't bad. There aren't a lot of people that live on, you know, main roads around here, at least where we are. Mm-hmm. So when we see one, it's usually pretty minor injuries, thankfully.
My boy Rainer, if he ain't got nine lives, then he used one of them the other day because he went running out. And he doesn't do this. My Havanese will run out anywhere and not even care. But my Rainer never runs out of the road. He ran straight out the road, car came out the street, and I saw it happening, man. That guy was not paying attention. He was right around the car. He had everything set up for him to get run over. And he missed him. I don't know how he did it, but he's like, I waved. I was like, hey, because people fly up and down our street. But yeah, kind of scary stuff. So what is there, assuming that an animal gets, let's say they break a leg. These are not horses. Obviously, we can do things with dogs with broken legs. You can't do anything with horses. Typically, what do? You can you set that? Do you put pins in it? What do you do with a broken leg for an animal?
It depends on the age of the pet and depends on the fracture. But let me go back to your question just a second ago. I was going to say that we have gone where we are in our area, our demographic, we have gone from hit by cars to hit by golf carts or fallen off golf carts.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I can see that. I can think of two really bad golf cart injuries that killed the pet. And I can't tell you the last time I saw a hit by car that killed the pet, but there was one, both of these cases are dogs falling off a moving golf cart. That's what killed them. Wow. That'd just interesting.
Well, that'd be terrible.
Yes. Interesting demographic, you know, depending on where you live. I'm sure that they see that a lot in like retirement communities too. Everybody's got a golf cart. Everybody's got a dog. So probably
and I'm assuming they're bigger dogs.
So one of them was a bigger dog. And then the other one was a small dog that was basically strangled to death because it was on a leash.
Oh,
it was on a leash and it fell off the golf cart and it hanged itself.
Mm.
You know, hanged itself.
That's horrible. So, that's terrible.
Yeah. To answer your question about the fractures,
or a hanging dog, faces of dogs. Part
faces
five.
Of dogs. If you have a young dog, a young growing dog, and they break one of the longer bones of their leg, then you could, if it's still lined up and not displaced, you could probably splint it, especially a front leg. And then, you know, they're in a splint for 6 to 8 weeks, as long as you can keep them from being real active. And if it's fairly lined up, it'll heal well. The problem is if you get a fracture that's displaced so that the ends are not close together, you can sedate them and try to get the ends close together. And then maybe you can splint it. But in a lot of cases, if you have a lot of trauma, you're going to have multiple fractures to that limb. And if you have multiple fractures, you cannot splint it. It'll just be a disaster. Mm. So that would require some plating. Sometimes the fracture is so bad that you have to do an external fixator, which is like a Frankenstein looking thing. They're really crazy. But so you'll have external hardware that goes into the skin and into the bone, and it holds the bone together. So you have an external portion of the apparatus.
Kind of like those leg braces, kids used to wear. Yeah.
But if anybody out there is curious, you want to see some, you know, just really outrageous fracture repairs. If you just Google external fixator dog fracture, you'll see some really wild stuff.
Faces of fixator.
Faces of fixator.
Dudes in back alleys fixing dog legs. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I think about like that scene with the original Batman with Michael Keaton with Jack Nicholson, you know, when he's in the back alley getting fixed up after robbery goes wrong.
That used to be real. They used to actually do that. Anything interesting going on at the shop before we get into some emails here, some mutt mail?
I mean, it's been just pretty routine stuff. It's been pretty routine stuff since last week. So right. I don't really have any fantastic stories for you.
First question I got is from the Curry family out here, Russell Woods. My Havanese, which you've seen my Havanese. It's if you didn't know what a dog's supposed to weigh, you'd think I was starving this dog because you can feel pretty much a lot of its bones. But it eats. I mean, I feed it. I don't know what else am I supposed to do with it. But it's you can feel its bones, right? But it's healthy, right?
Yeah.
You tell me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last four or five, I don't know if I'm having issues with this dog, but the last four or five nights, I feed them at 6 a.m. and then 4 p.m. And they know exactly when to feed at 4 o'clock when they're coming to find me. And of course they have this thing where there's a big bowl and a small bowl. They won't eat the food out of the big bowl. They both want to eat out of the small bowl. And the Havanese is the alpha dog. So he gets to eat first, and then Rainer sits in the back, waits on him. And then what he doesn't eat, then he can eat. And then he goes to the big bowl. Well, they've been not fighting over food, but they're rushing through it. And my Havanese is eating so fast that he's vomiting every time he eats now. So the last four nights at 4 o'clock feeding, he's chowing down, he eats a whole bowl of food, and then he goes under a piece of furniture and you hear that. And there's only one word sound, and that is the licking of their, you know, what's at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, knock it off. So what's going on with my dog and why is he doing this? I mean, they've known each other for years. Why all of a sudden? Because all I can know is right after he gets done eating, he vomits it all up and it's all right there again. And then of course, you know what? He's hungry again. He wants to eat again. And I'm thinking to myself, what do I feel like after I've just vomited? I want to drink a water and I want to eat something. So then he's hungry. Then I feel bad for not feeding him again. What's going on?
I'd put some ketchup on his vomit and just, you know, just like leftovers. It's leftovers.
Yeah.
Don't do that. What about in the morning? Is it happening in the morning?
No.
Are they doing the same thing in the morning?
No.
Are they eating all their food in the morning or do they leave it?
They are leaving a lot of it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're super hungry. They're ravenous at the end of the day. So when they do that, they eat really fast. They're going to throw up. So it's fine if they don't want to eat in the morning, but would it be possible to feed them separately? Would they eat separately?
I don't think they'd eat separately. I think they got their own little thing. Because Rainer will get me up to go feed because he knows he's got Frisco's got to eat. Funny thing is I'll leave the food out for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and I take it off the floor. If we eat dinner after the 4 o'clock eating, Rainer will wait to eat with us. He waits and then he eats out of the big bowl and he eats dinner with us. As soon as we sit down, he's like, he knows what our prayer is. And as soon as he'll hook up to the table, he'll sit up and look at us. Oh, the Lord's been good to me. And so I thank the Lord for giving me the things I need to sit on a rainy apple seed. And then as soon as we're done praying, he chows down.
What if you got them some slow feeders? You think they'd eat out of it? You know what I'm talking about? Where they have obstacles in the bowl they have to eat around and slows them down?
Do tell. I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, they're just called slow feeders. And they have, they're like built into the bowl. They have to eat around certain things. They have to work for it. They can't just shove their head in the food and just get it all in three bites.
I am not.
But the other thing, the reason that they're throwing up a lot of times is they're also swallowing a lot of air. So the other thing that you could potentially do is you could, are there bowls on the floor? They have their, are they like directly on the floor?
Yeah.
Their bowls?
Yeah.
Or do you have them elevated? Okay.
No, they're on the
floor.
So
the other thing you could potentially do is you could elevate the bowls so that they're not, angling their heads down, that they're more eating where their heads are level, and then they won't swallow as much air because when they do that, their stomach distends and they're more likely to regurgitate. So you can think about raising their bowls. So they can still eat fast, but maybe they won't get as much air. Or you could think about getting them some slow feeder bowls.
All right, there you go. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Always some wonderful email questions here. Trina in Childersburg wants to know, how often do I need to cut my dog's nails?
Well, it kind of depends on how short you want them to stay consistently. So if you don't want your dog's nails to scratch up your floor, you need to cut them a lot because they need to stay short and the blood supply to those nails needs to stay short. If you let your dog's nails grow out, you know, for weeks or months on end, the blood supply is going to follow the nail and you're not going to be able to get the dog's nails short again without making them bleed. So it really starts early in the dog's life. If you want to keep a consistently short nail, and you can do it every week to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it really is just a case of doing it when they need it and when you want to do it. But you know, to be, I'd probably say once a month, mm-hmm. you know, to really keep them where they're trimmed back and they're not getting overgrown once a month.
All right. Stan in Huntsville says, I've never had an issue with my Cocker Spaniel being a humper, but recently the last three or four times I've had friends come over to the house, he goes to town on my leg. What's going on with my dog? It's a male. So it's a male, by the way. It evidently is not in any issues. And for some reason, he's making it sound like when his friends come over, the dog is like trying to put on a show or trying to show some type of dominance over his owner or something.
And yeah, so the dog, so I understand, the dog is humping the owner,
yes.
not the guest.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new one on me. Most dogs do hump because of dominance. But I could see that maybe potentially this dog's doing it because it's maybe nervous or uncomfortable for some reason. So I could see it being either one of those things. And if it's a dominance thing, either way, I probably just put the dog in another room when I had people come over. Also, if the dog's not neutered, you might want to neuter him.
Yeah. Do never thought I'd ask this question, and it's probably going to sound pretty sick, but do dogs enjoy the same sensations as humans do when they ejaculate when they have sex?
I mean, I would assume so.
I mean, they don't make any noises, and you know, you can't look at their face and they're like, oh, but I mean, I the only reason I ask is, you know, we've all
been, my dog does that. Dog smokes a cigarette afterwards.
We've all been
your
there.
Dog doesn't do that.
We've all been there. We've been, you know, pet our dog and the little red thing comes out. Also the penis comes out and you're like, whoa. And you're like, I'm sorry. I got you a little excited there. Cause you figured that you got excited, but I would assume but maybe dogs aren't smart enough because males will only hit something that's in heat, correct?
They won't
have sex because it feels good. Dogs don't have sex because it feels good.
No, I don't know. I don't. So if we're talking about like actual reproduction, then yeah, they've got to have a female that is receptive and is in season. And that lets the male dog know that it's go time. But that's different than when a dog is humping something out of dominance or aggression. You know, when a dog is humping something for those two reasons, they're not looking for love. You know, they're looking just to assert their dominance. So a dog is not going to actually try to get it on unless they have a receptive female.
All right, there we go. I can't believe we've been sitting here talking for 40 minutes. I didn't realize that we've just been sitting here. What happens? You start talking rock and roll. I know, right? I'm like, have we been talking for 40 minutes? You want to go to the 40? Dark Side of the Pooch, brought to you by the fine folks on there at Ed's Pet World, in business for 50 years. Seth, the Cosby, and the crew down there do fantastic work. Of course, Angie and everyone down there. They got exotic pets. They're going to make sure that you're going to get to pets. I mentioned I got a chinchilla, the coolest thing that I've ever owned. I don't know if I'll ever get a gerbil or a guinea pig or a hamster again, the chinchilla. And I think it lives 20, 30 years. So I'm good. As long as my dog doesn't get a hold of it, it's fantastic. And also, of course, his wonderful Sasquatch comics and toys and comics down there in Citation Corp. They do wonderful work. Tell people how they can get in touch with you. And I know we are getting ready out of school in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. People are going to be going on vacation. They're going to be wanting to board their animals. Tell them where to do it.
Yeah. And also if David Gilmore travels with any animals,
yes,
I would offer him a complimentary night of boarding if he plays our fair City of Birmingham. So okay. David, just that, you know, that, you can reach me.
That may be enough to reach me at the top. Yeah.
208-0301, 205-208-0301. You can email me, David Gilmore, at rossbridgeanimalhospital@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook and I will give a free night of boarding to your pup Sid. I'm sure its name is Sid. Or Barrett, maybe.
You're gonna have some dude named David Gilmore calling you up. You watch. He's gonna say, "Dude, I promise you, this is David Gilmore from Pink Floyd."
Yeah. Well, you have to hand deliver the dog. That's it. You have to bring it yourself. There's no proxy. We're not doing that.
Oh, David Gilmore here has to. Here come the rules.
He's got to show up.
You know, David lived down in Homewood, did you?
He's got to show up with his black strat.
Yeah. I'm sure you'd do more than that for David if he showed up. If he had a dog, he had a dog named Sid, that would be funny though.
I'd have a lot of requests for him to play. That's for sure.
There's no doubt. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you. We'll catch up next week.
See you, bud.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.